In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh, and with me is my rootinous, tootinous, cow bootinous, the one, the only.
Giddy up for God, Josh. Travis Ratz here.
All right. Travis Ratz and I are bringing you the Comic Exposure Podcast, where we dive deep into graphic novels or trades, and it's a Western one, Travis. We are on our second Western book? Yes. Second Western. Second Western for the month of March.
Blood Brothers Mother was our first.
Yeah, Blood Brothers Mother was the first. Now we're on Dead Acre. Dead Acre out on Atheon and Vault Comics. Dead Acre Black Badge, Volume 1. Creator and story by Rhett C. Bruno and Jamie Castle. The script by Cullen Bunn. The art by Riley Brown. The colors by Fares Mace. And the lettering by And World Design. Travis Ratz, we got ourselves a Western here, but not your normal everyday Western. We got ourselves a spooky, supernatural Western.
There may or may not be a hellmouth in this book, Josh.
There may or may not be a hellmouth. Now, Travis Ratz, we're reading this one, and I'm gonna preface this by saying there are a series of three novels by Rhett C. Bruno and Jamie Castle that are the Black Badge trilogy. This book is the prequel, which is not one of the novels. So this is kind of...
Oh, okay. That was different than I thought. You said you read the novel.
When I read the first... So when you only read... They're like, hey, man, do you want to read the... what do you call it? The
preview?
The preview. It is the beginning, which is kind of what you learn in the three books. And I was like, oh, okay, that's a good way to start this off, is with that piece of it. That preview ends before I realized, oh, this is the story that you don't get. This is the kind of prequel story when he meets Rosa for the first time. So
what's the novel series follow then? We'll talk about that, but I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah, the novel series follows kind of his it kind of starts in medias res of him kind of in like Monster of the Week, kind of how this is a Monster
same,
of the
same
Week.
Character James Crowley
same character it's him, but it's after he meets Rosa, right? Okay. So it's like years after this, and so long enough after it, and so you get hints and they talk about this story, right? Like, oh, remember when I blah, blah, blah with your husband and I saved, you know, like all of that. But you don't get it in those three books. It really does start off, I guess. It feels like you read all of those Supernatural detective. What's his name?
Dresden Files.
Yeah, it's very Dresden File. It just starts with one story, right? You don't get, you know, you get a little, you get the, over the three novels, you learn all of the how he becomes the Black Badge, the shootout, all of that stuff throughout the novels. So this was an interesting way to start it, but it makes sense to me that if you want to do a more ongoing series, you start where he meets Rosa. And I think that's what we get in this book is this, it's not the first time he meets her, spoiler alert, but like when they meet each other as adults.
So I'm guessing in the novel series, like his and Rosa's relationship is constant throughout the novels.
It is a crux of the three books, but it grows over that period of time. So she kind of
grows when she shows, Rosemary knows and no
she kind of shows up in the, I don't know that it's right away in the first book. It's not right away in the first book.
Yeah, but she's just like paramour then. Yeah. Like throughout.
Like it's this weird relationship where they're like more, it becomes romantic. Okay. It doesn't start romantic.
A real girl, His Girl Friday kind of situation going on. These references are all over the place. I'm feeling very 1940s today.
It's good.
All right, so we've been talking We've been talking real big vision here. Let's talk about, so I, Josh, have not read any of those novels. I know that when you suggested the book that you said you had, this is based on like a novel series. So like, cool. So that was in the back of my head the whole time, but I kind of came into this fresh. So I think maybe I can give a little bit of the plot. So our book kind of follows James Crowley, who is a
hand of God.
Hand of God, or the White Throne, as it's referred to in this book, the White Throne. So he's a cowboy living in the Old West, and he's brought resurrected back to life after a brutal murder shootout. And now he is tasked by God to go from town to town, you know, solving mysteries and bringing justice to the unjust. Fighting the supernatural, yes. And so in this Dead Acre book, I forgot the name of the town, but he goes into a town. And
Dead Acre.
We get this. That makes sense. Dead Acre is the place to be.
To not be.
Supernatural. And this is kind of where we get for me, it was his first adventure, where we get introduced to what James Crowley's powers are, you know, how does he communicate with God, through what messengers?
Yeah.
Like what are, he's got some supernatural detective Sherlock powers on there. And spoiler alerts, he gets out of this adventure in one piece.
Yeah. Yeah. So last time we read a pretty straightforward kind of coming of age, Western story. This is a twist. It's like, this is a weird middle break between our three Westerns, right? So this is the, hey, let's get spooky with our Western in the middle.
Right.
So I want to ask you a little bit about, we talked last time, like, what do you want from a Western? And so I want to know from you, Travis, how does this subvert, or how does this use the Western to get and do this supernatural thing? And do you think, as someone who read Dresden Files, I love X-Files. That's like one of my go-to shows, right? Always will turn on an X-Files. I like the kind of supernatural. So I want to ask a little bit, like, what did this do for you as a Western, but also as kind of this supernatural detective story?
Yeah, it kind of, you know, for me, it feels a lot like urban fantasy set in the West, right?
Yeah.
Where I love a good sorcerer, I love a good magician, and I'm not saying that is what James Crowley is, because his powers are kind of, you know, brought in from God. But we've talked before when we've read these books, of course, like Preacher, where I love the idea of angels and demons, like the battle of heaven and hell being played out in the mortal world is always really interesting. And obviously, as a 42-year-old, I was a big fan of the Buffy series.
this is very Buffy.
So it's very Buffy, and I say that because I mentioned the word Hellmouth at the beginning of it. Although Hellmouth is not a Buffy term, it's a biblical kind of thing, early as the medieval ages, you know, it was the framing device that allowed for Buffy to have these monster of the week battles in here.
Yeah.
So I'm all primed. They were really kind of like, I like this book, but in some ways, once I got past the first couple pages, or actually read the back of the book, you're like, oh, okay, you like peanut butter and you like Coca-Cola and you like, it's just like everything I like. You go, these are all the flavors I like. You're putting them into there. And then they're like, they top it off with a nice, you know, a spread of Western. I'm like, I love Westerns. I love them.
Yeah.
On there. So for me, once I saw all the ingredients involved, I was like, wow, how are you going to give each tone and each kind of genre style its moment in the sun, and what's the balance of that look like? And I would say for me that they really did lean more on the supernatural than anything else. The Western, obviously the background and the dialogue, but this really became like a supernatural mystery. The driving thrust is we're trying to figure out who killed Rose's husband, or what happened to Rose's missing husband. At the beginning part, he's just missing, right? Yeah. So it's this supernatural Western mystery on there. So I wanted to ask you, what made you read the books in the first place? Was it the pitch of the type of story, or did someone recommend it to you?
So I think for me, part of it is I listened to the three books. Right.
It's so the guy who does Red Dead Redemption.
Part
right?
of it is I'm going to tell you, Travis Ratz, you need to listen to the three books, because Roger Clark, who does the voice, is perfection. It is
so you had so that going good. Through your head the whole time you're reading this comic.
The whole entire time.
Okay.
So
that's a different layer. That's an added layer.
Yeah. I was looking for something to read after. So I had listened to all of the Dungeon Crawler Carl books, and I was looking for something to read. And I was going through my Audible app, and I was like, okay, supernatural Western. Why not? I'll give it a try. I had a credit. So I listened to the first book, and I was like, I started listening to the first book. I'm like, oh yeah, nope, I'm in. This is great. And so I listened to the three books back to back to back. It is a good story, a good through line. And Roger Clark's narration and his voice acting is like the cherry on top of the cake. It is a really great thing of it. So I do have his voice going. I have that voice going through my head the whole time, right?
And I've never played Red Dead Redemption, so I don't even know what his voice sounds like.
Travis,
I was kind of looking up stuff for this book.
I'm telling you, and I was going to pitch this to you at the end of this episode, but I'm going to do it now. You're a single man. You have some disposable income. I'm going to tell you, Travis Ratz, to go buy yourself a PS5. Buy yourself Red Dead Redemption 2 and play it, because
I've been trying to for years.
Travis, you will just want to ride your horse around through the countryside. You can go fishing, you can go hunting, and then you can decide, are you a bad cowboy? Are you a bad vigilante or a good vigilante? Right? Like, that is,
I can just live my life and no banditos are gonna bother me.
No, they'll bother you, but you get to decide, like, how are you gonna handle them? Are you gonna shoot first and ask questions later? Are you gonna hog tie them?
Well, fellas, I'm just trying to do some fishing here by my favorite fishing hole.
That's right. And you're riding your little horse around, and you hear someone yelling for help. Are you gonna help them or not? Do you want to rob a train? You can rob it. You just decide, I'm gonna rob a train.
Can you shoot your own horse in this game?
I don't remember. I would never shoot my horse. So Travis, I play the game. I'm a bandit, but I have like, you know, I'm not too bad of a bandit.
You're a black hat.
I will shoot if shot upon.
White scarf.
Yes, I will shoot if shot upon, but I'm not going to run around terrorizing the countryside. That's not who I am. But
Do the brothels know your character's name?
Well, it's not quite the level of Vice City, right?
Yeah.
So it's not quite that, but you can go get a bath from one of the ladies at the hotel. Ooh. They'll scrub you down.
Scrub me down. I love a good bath.
So I will. My pitch is, now go buy yourself a PlayStation. Go play the game. Listen to Roger Clark.
I do have a spring break coming up, Josh.
Travis Ratz, I am telling you, you will be an incredibly happy man. But let's get back to the book. Let's get back to the book. Yeah. I will agree with you. I think it takes all of the good, all those little pieces that you want it to do, and it is more supernatural than everything else. I will tell you, the series is the same way. I think the book, because of the descriptions, and it gets to spend more time telling you about the backgrounds and the areas and the places, that it feels more Western than the comic does.
And the narrator that you're listening to. Yeah.
Right. And I think the comic relies on you knowing it's a Western based on what you're seeing, what you're looking at, where the book has to describe the six shooter, the bullet it has to describe the time it takes to load the gun. The narrator is going to do all that. Although this book does have narration by, you know, our main character. It is not heavy in the like noir. It is there, but it doesn't feel as Western. Right. I mean, there are two kinds of people in this world. Those who respond to violence with violence and those who try to calm the rest of us down. Right. Like you need that voice in your head saying those things in order for it to like really sit in the Western. But I think it does. I mean, art wise, I think the art's pretty great in this. I think it gives you that Western vibe, but it is a supernatural story overall. Right. Like that's what this is.
That's the punch, I think, for the story. I think that's what they're leaning on for the, like your entry into this world is because I mean, they pack a lot into this book. I mean, there's no book breaks. Also, we should mention it's all one long graphic novel, correct?
Yeah.
You read it as well.
It's how I read it. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't break the way that anything else would. I mean, there's you know what? I didn't even notice that as I was reading it that there are
chapter breaks.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So it does feel like one story on there, but it's got so many multiple components. So it jumps you in pretty cool. Well, you start off with a flashback, right? Which James Crowley, we see that him getting shot in like a shootout. And then we see, okay, now it's the present day of the story and he's riding into Dead Acre and possibly maybe my favorite Western trope that you see in Westerns. I love a good stranger enters the saloon. I don't think I've seen a bad one. Buster Scruggs might be the best one. Like the first one. The
piano stops. Scruggs. Right.
Yeah. Like, but there's just something about that. And they all look the same. It's like every storyteller is reusing the same saloon set on there. The saloon's always on the same side of the building too, like the bar part, you know, it's never on the left side. It's always on the right side of the, of the room, right? Staircase is always in the same place. So I really loved entering Dead Acre through the saloon, which is really great. And we get to meet like the local gang, which is always really cool because every Western town has their local gang on here. But this Western gang, Josh, probably has my favorite part of the novel is when we get the twist that the gang who's given kind of a hard time and being all like, you better get going, boy, you know, turn out to be werewolves, Josh.
Yes.
Werewolves. And I don't know if I've ever said on this show that werewolves were like my childhood fear. And so as an adult now, every time I read or consume media with werewolves in, I'm like, okay, where are we at? What's our werewolf scale on here? And so, these werewolves, pretty scary.
I will tell you that is a through line of the books. Werewolves play a large part in the series. The young Native American boy who can turn into a dog or turn into a wolf as well, that plays a key part in the series. So like the skinwalkers, right? It plays a key part in the series, and the werewolves are a through line throughout the series.
That's good to know, because at first I thought that it was going to be like a Buffy Monster of the Week thing, and I was like, ooh, werewolves kind of underutilized. I figured they would pop up some other point, you know, because they're like a local gang, but it sounds like they're a huge part of the book series.
So I will tell you, the interesting part about it is reading the first novel, I was like, okay, it's Monster of the Week. That's what each novel is going to be a different monster. I think that was probably and I don't know, I haven't read anything by the authors talking about the books or anything like that. It feels like that was the original intent. And then they were like, no, we really like these characters together. So let's make it a trilogy that kind of tells a whole story. And so although there is a different, like there's a monster in this, there's a monster in the second book, there's a monster in the third book, there's a through line that carries those three novels together that tell a much more cohesive story. And it's less, I traveled here, here's the monster I got, right? Like it feels, they become more connected through the three books.
So can we talk about in this book, one of the ways that Crowley, our protagonist, talks to God is through like this
His handler.
I forgot the handler's name, but it's like Shireen or something like that.
Charmaine, Chargrafane. It should have been
Clementine. We just call it a day.
So it doesn't talk about it too much in here, but there is a constant thing with him and the angel in the other books where he calls her Char. And the angel does not like that at all. So that's, I mean, he said it in here, but it is very much like they talk a lot because they're novels, right? So the banter becomes more.
It reminded me of Quantum Leap with the two, like Char is like on here. Anyways, so we enter this novel, and our character is or this graphic novel. And our character has a certain set of, I don't want to say rules, but like powers. Because we really haven't established too many rules. Yeah. One, he has silver bullets, but silver burns him.
Yeah. Silver hurts supernatural things. Yeah. Silver
spicy.
Hurts.
It's spicy for him.
Yeah. Silver hurts supernatural things, right? So he is supernatural. Silver hurts him.
Two, he can like divine things by touching them. He got the shining. The shinning,
You touch a dead body, you can see the moments of their death. That's what he gets.
That's it. It's like a real.
Yeah.
It's like what with the Christopher Walken one, Dead Zone.
Yeah. It would be that zoom in, that like zoom in out. Like you zoom into his head, but everything zooms away. That's what you'd get.
And then he talks to Char through like mirrors and things like that. What other powers or rules are I missing that
he
have been?
Can't feel pain.
He can't feel pain, and he unless can't taste silver. Liquor.
Yeah. He has no sense of taste, no sense of like touch.
And gosh, Josh, he really wishes he could feel that sting of whiskey.
It is wonderful, right?
He mentions it a couple. Every time whiskey appears, he's like, "Yeah, I wish I had that sting." Oh, we get it. We get it, sir.
I wish I could feel that fire in my belly.
I wish I could feel a fire, but I'll drink it anyways. There. So and then our main antagonist of this is
he has this lasso.
Oh, that's right. That comes like the third act when you're like, oh, this is like a Wonder Woman lasso.
The power of God imbued.
Yeah, like
in the
it holds you in the one place. Like you can't break it on there. But our antagonist in this book turns out to be, which it's always a cool kind of villain, a necromancer.
Yeah. Yeah. So I love a necromancer.
Which leads me to my most enjoyable moment in reading this book was there is this big third act, skeletons rising from their graves, like multi-page action battle, which to me is really the highlight of this book.
Shooting skeletons, breaking stuff. Yeah.
I think this book does action really well. And like in that moment where you could feel I get exhausted watching this, watching James Crowley fight in this book. I'm like, gosh, woo.
And I will tell you, the writers do a really good job in the novels of those set piece action scenes are written very, very well. Like there are many of them throughout the novels and they all feel visceral and high stakes and the pacing is really good. And I'm glad that Cullen Bunn, who's a horror writer, who's a comic book writer, working with Rhett Bruno and Jamie have really been able to translate that and do a really good job of that visceral feeling fight showing up in this book.
Yeah, and if it was written really well in the books, they might have not have had to take too many liberties if they were just pulling like some of those scenes straight from the books.
Well, this is the thing. This is a prequel. So this There is no novel of this. So it feels like, Retzi Bruno and Jamie Castle, or Jaime, I'm not sure, I believe they probably wrote this out or gave a treatment and then Cullen did the script for it. Right. Like they had a story for it. Cause unless this is a novella somewhere that I haven't seen, right. I haven't really hunted for it, but it is not part of the original trilogy.
Okay. Yep. And is everything in there like take place at Dead Acre or they move from town to town?
They move from place to place.
Said they're going to move from place to place.
Yeah. They move from place to place.
But it's all connected. Is everything connected to that? I want to talk about this Hellmouth. I mentioned it several times on here. I love this device. How do you feel about this Hellmouth, Josh?
So,
does this play a big part in the books? Were you excited to see it?
There are different Hellmouths. You can open a Hellmouth, right? So it is not just there, right? It can be opened. So that is a large part of this. There's a whole scene with a Wendigo. There are so many wonderful supernatural things that show up in these books. There's like Native American gods. They're like a whole, it like pulls not just like werewolves and necromancers, but then like, oh yeah, well here is this thing. Here is a goat man here. You know what I mean? Like all of these pieces, it very much plays with a large deck of supernatural characters.
Okay.
So that piece of it felt very kind of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, right? That very sort of monster of the week. But they do a really good job of like making the West, because it is not overly populated. The reason why the supernatural can survive in the West and can be out in the open is there's not enough people. Yeah. So you can hide.
Crazy people can live in like the hills of Arizona.
Yeah, you can hide that you're supernatural, right? You can blend in a different way. Like in the city, it's harder to be in there. There's vampires. It's a whole thing. It is a great. It is good stuff.
Yeah, if you're in an urban town, someone walks in, they're all dirty and hairy. Like that dude might be a werewolf. Mm-hmm. But in the old West, you're like, oh, that's just Bill.
Yeah, that's just Wild Bill. No. Yeah. The whole thing.
I like
so I enjoy the idea of why the novels do a really good job of explaining why this is happening in the Wild West, right? And why you're not
so making this attempting scenes. To really make that setting a part of the story itself.
Yeah. And of course, like right, like there's a part of the novel that takes place in the Wild West city, right? One of the cities that's like Crescent something. I can't remember what it's called, but like a whole, and it's like they're New Orleans. Right. Like it's a whole thing, like voodoo and all of that comes into this as well. They do a really good job of playing with all these supernatural pieces throughout the novels. And I think they do a really good job in this and this graphic novel setting it up. Right. So I'm very interested. I'm telling you, like, I would read the next one if it's based on the next novel. Right. Like, I am very much like, OK, give it to me. I enjoyed taking what I liked about the novels and then seeing it visually. It was fun to play. I'm curious to see if volume 2 is the stories in the novel or if they're going to play a little more in the space before the novels start.
That's what I was just looking at here. It's like volume 1 end, Dead Acre. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if they're going to jump into what Josh is saying or they're going to tell more backstories. Also, they're really pushing the audiobook in this graphic novel. Usually don't see that. They'll usually say like based on, but here they're like audiobook performed by Roger Clark.
Dude,
Arthur Clark Morgan in Red Dead Redemption 2. Like they're pushing that.
Red Dead Redemption 2 is one of those like magical games. It just really like, it's so very realistic. There's so many, they spent, you know, it's so long making the game. It is like one of those, a beautiful game where you just ride your horse and all of a sudden you're like, oh my God. The vistas. It's wonderful, Travis. Wonderful.
Well, that makes me think about like, so I know you did the audiobook, but like, I know you can probably kind of imagine what the novel looks like. And then we had the comic book novel. What do you think for this character in this type of story where it's supernatural? Yeah. Supernatural does beg you to like use your imagination. That's kind of the fun part about reading science fiction and supernatural in just a novel form, not a graphic novel form.
Yeah.
And then you have the Western side on this. When it comes to your James Crowley stories, reading in comics, having the book read to you in audio form, how do you want to consume your great James Crowley stories? What do you prefer?
So I think right now the audiobook is a superior product. And I don't mean that I don't like the graphic novel. The graphic novel was great. I thought the art was really good, but I think there's something about hearing that narrator that gives you that sort of like, you get the narrator's voice. And I think maybe had it been a different narrator, maybe the novel would have been a great way to kind of digest this. But the narrator, Roger Clark's voice is such an important piece of that audiobook that I think it sells a mood. and it sells. And look, I spent, I don't know, 80 hours playing that video game. So mm-hmm. like hearing him, I've played through it twice, Travis. Like I played the story. Wow. I think I originally played it on our Xbox and then I got it for the PlayStation. I think I played it on the PlayStation the second time through. I don't remember, but like it is one of those games where you're like, okay, this is a, like that voice just is a powerful tool, I think, in setting the tone and mood of this.
Is it first person, the book, the novel?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I like this book a lot. I thought it was really fun. I thought it was a quick read and it had like, ooh, I didn't know what to expect, even though it was like a mystery and you kind of know things are going to end up like, it's a hero story. You know how things are going to end up. It was like, ooh, werewolves. Ooh, skinwalkers. So that was cool. What I didn't get is I just didn't feel James Crowley. I didn't really care for him. Like I didn't dislike him as a character. There's nothing that really gravitated me to him. And I think that is a big separation. What you're talking about, that novel being first person narrative and then being told in like the Western demeanor of a guy.
Yeah. Just, I think the other,
even
part
if
of this,
the plot points are the same on there.
Yeah.
I think it could give me this sense of like, ooh, I know this character. I felt like this character in the book was telling me a lot, like, I'm the right hand of God, and this is my job. I work for the white throne. And I'm like, but who are you? Who are you?
But I would
James
tell
Crowley.
You, I think part of that in the novel, it does start you in the middle of nowhere, right? So you you learn about him through, you know, a novel, as opposed to, I feel like they had two jobs to do here, right? You have to introduce the character and then tell this sort of like prequel story, this sort of, you know, this prologue to the novels. And I think if they're going to tell the rest of the stories, you can't give as much of Crowley away in this.
Right.
So for me, having read the novels, this was like a good, for me, I'm like, okay, I know who James Crowley is. I spent this time with him over three books.
Right.
This can't tell you too much about him because then you're spoiling key pieces of the next three novels as you learn about who he is, as you learn more about, because they don't give you why he gets in the shootout in this book. They can't, right? They can't give you too much of it because that's a key piece of the other books, right? Like, learning that backstory about him and the rest of his gang and who he was is told throughout the next three novels. So I can't give you that in the prologue.
Can I ask you, Josh, that without telling it, is it cool? Is it like, is it something like, ooh, I wouldn't have expected that? Or is it like pretty traditional, like, you know, like I try to defend someone and
it's,
like I have
it's pretty,
falling
it's
out.
Pretty, it's pretty traditional.
Okay. Okay.
But it's, I think the kind of the back and forth between him and that gang leader becomes an important part of the whole story.
Oh, good. I did like their dynamic.
Yeah. So that becomes a very important integral piece as the novels go on.
Do they become like buddies, like Justified?
Absolutely not. Like... absolutely not. And it culminates in a very, it becomes brutal and bloody, and because he can't feel pain, right? Like there is some serious shit that happens as these novels go on.
One of the things I saw in this comic, and it was just kind of underneath the surface, and I don't know if I was like, I wonder, but it made me think. I haven't researched the author of the novels. Is this like an MXPX type of situation where it's like we're a punk band, but like we're a Christian punk band, where there is like a sense of like, or you don't get that sense on there. Okay. Okay.
No, because it is this again, this is the prologue, right? Yeah. And so you can't give too, that is also a key part of it. The part of like, God good versus evil, or God. I mean, look, if these guys didn't read Preacher.
Okay.
You know,
so
what I mean?
It's going to start leaning into that type of conversation.
Yes.
When it comes to the Lord and their servants of justice. Okay, right. That's what I was wondering. Yeah, I didn't know if it was going to go into like more of like a Percival Arthurian legend type of thing.
No.
Or, okay.
It's very much like he's living in that gray area between. You know what I mean? Like, it is.
He's going to start asking some questions about, he's going to start being like, hey, can I see the superior here? I got some questions to ask.
So I want to ask you a little bit about, let's talk art in this. What did you think of the art in this book? And this month we have read, we kind of started with our palate cleanser, Don't Spit in the Wind. We're at this one now. We have read, this is our third indie publisher, right? As we've read this, Mad Cave, Distillery, and now Atheon. I don't remember the other name and this one, but Vault Comics. I think that's what it is. Yeah. Vault. Atheon and Vault Comics. So my question to you is, one of those distilleries paying big money to get big artists and writers to kind of crank out books, you know, to kind of get on this. I was really impressed that Cullen Bunn is writing this, because he's written kind of in bigger indie comics. And then two, I don't know who this artist is, but I was pretty impressed by the art on this indie comic.
Yeah, me too. I mean, well, for me, I really liked how he did action, not just like his style of drawing, but like how he kind of uses panels to pace an action sequence, movement, stress, trauma, struggle. So I really like that. I would love to see this stripped down a little bit to pencils, because I do feel, and this can, you can kind of see this sometimes when it comes to properties that are just kind of taken from other areas, and they try to put them into like a comic book form or tell their comic book story, is they get real digital with the coloring and the kind of the after effects on there, which can make it feel not digital, but it could take some, the drawings and make it feel more house style. It's like whatever, you know, the pen, whatever kind of originality sometimes the pencils have can sometimes be washed out in the coloring, in the sense that what was, could be a little bit more like, oh, this is kind of avant-garde, maybe even a little towards like hatchy or like indie, and is now house.
I would agree. I think the coloring is the one piece that feels, there's a lot of highlights on faces, right? And I would say that that's probably the one thing that detracts from it the most, or makes it look, it's like a TikTok filter on every character. And I don't know how else to say it, right? It feels like, oh, I'm going to highlight this area. It's going to be very bright. And there's going to be the red nose and the blush here. It did feel a bit kind of filtered. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely. I know exactly what you're saying.
Especially on Rosa.
You described it really well.
Especially Rosa. Rosa is supposed to be this sort of very attractive, you know what I mean? Like it is, it's played up a whole lot in each of the novels, right? She's supposed to be this, she uses her feminine wiles but it felt very like TikTok-y. I don't know how else to, like very filtered. Like that.
Yeah. And to be fair, I think we've read a couple of Westerns like in the career of this show, but certainly, you know, over the last month, and it's very easy to go with the, as we like, I think we've coined this barbecue coloring when it comes to Western that we love. Those Southwestern colors that we saw in Blood Mother's Brother, we might see in future books. This doesn't try to have a specific palette that has a voice in and of itself, which we're so often used to seeing in the types of books that we read typically, and where the colorist kind of comes in and is adding their own voice to the story on here. And this is like, now we're just going to color this bad boy on here, make it look good, you know. So I think it probably has more mass appeal that way. If you were just like, oh, that story that I listened to the audiobook, or if you're a Red Dead Redemption fan, it might be more accessible to you if you're kind of following the careers of the people associated with that game to be in a comic book shop and pick up something that looks and is colored like this.
Yeah, I would say I would agree with you. It feels, and again, this isn't to detract from it. I thought the art was really good. The coloring isn't bad. I think that you're right. It isn't a voice. The coloring is there to color it, not to kind of, it doesn't set a mood. Not that there aren't moody moments. There's the moments in the snow that feel very stark and very, you know, very bleak. But the night scenes and sort of those Western scenes aren't, or, you know, West Wild West scenes don't evoke a lot of emotion like I think you get in other books based on the color, right?
Right. And I think it struck out to me because it's been a long time since we have read a book where the colorist hasn't been a voice in the storytelling.
Well, we often gravitate towards the wonderful Jordi Belair, who is a voice all of her own.
Or even, you know, like, I mean? Don't Spit Into the Wind or Blood Brothers Brother. You know, these were like the colors were being like, were a talking point unto themselves. So I'm not throwing shade on this one. It just, that I was like, okay, coloring works and it's not bad. It's just, it was like, oh, okay. You know, but it was an opportunity to make it feel a little bit more Western on there, but they had other things going on there. The coloring certainly made it feel more supernatural with the darks and the blues.
Like in
the night scenes that were very sharp. So,
let's kind of wrap up this conversation, this idea of this supernatural Western. Is that a good peanut butter in your is that a good peanut butter in your chocolate? Do you like that mix? Did you have fun spending time in this sort of world that we've created?
I did. I liked it. Like, I liked Dresden Files. It's been years I checked in with those books, and I would recommend this book to anyone who kind of likes Dresden Files. Like, hey, you like that? Here, check this out. It's kind of like that, but in the West. For me, I think I would like to listen to one of the novels. I think that might, because the idea of the genres mixing here, I'm like, ooh, I love the idea of all these genres on here. I'm like, ooh, this is really fun to read. Do I think that it's the pinnacle of it? I was like, ooh, no, I think you can go even further with this.
Yeah.
And maybe the book series does.
And I think that's the limitation of this being a prologue. I think you're telling a tale that is not steeped in those novels. And so there's things that you have to hold back because they're key parts of the novels coming up. So you can't give too much away of our character, right? Because the story doesn't start here. But I agree with you. I thought it kind of meshed those two worlds really well. I would encourage you, if you read this, to check out those novels.
I've been training for a half marathon this summer, Josh. So
there you go.
Doing a lot of long runs. Maybe I'll throw this on there.
There you go. It is a well worth your listen. They're not terribly long books, right? It's not like you're listening to a 30-hour epic, right? The narration is great. So Travis, we now have two goals for you. Those goals are to buy yourself a PlayStation 5 and play Red Dead Redemption 2. And the second is to listen to at least the first book in this trilogy. I'm tasking you with that. Those are the things you need to do with your life. I think you'll find fulfillment in both of those things, folks.
Those are also very time consuming things. Josh,
what else you got going on, bud? What else you got going on?
Classes.
I'm
training for a half marathon, Josh.
You're going to need a break. You're going to need a break in between those things. And this is what will happen. Look, FC Ka is not going to make it. So you might.
I can bring a book to the next. You're saying I should bring the audiobook.
Audiobook.
Put in my earbuds during the next game.
Yeah,
that's not bad.
So. Anything else on this one you want to leave our listeners with on this Western?
I think I'm pretty wrapped up on this one. Like I said, it was enjoyable. I went to it with no preconceptions. I love how they brought in, like, it just made me feel kind of like so many things. Dresden Files, Buffy, a little X-Files on there, a little bit of Preacher. It was sticking its finger in all my honeypots, Josh.
I like it. All right, folks, this is almost our last Western. We've got one more Western in March that's going to come your way. We are reading The Enfield Gang Massacre to close out our Western March, three Western books this month. If you enjoy the show, please rate it, review it, whatever, on whatever podcast app you're on. You can find us on all the podcast apps. You can also follow along with us, find out what our upcoming books are, discuss them with us, share messages with us on Instagram at Comic Exposure. You can find us there. We are sharing what's upcoming, sharing some panels from the books that we're reading, telling you what's going on, letting you know the episodes are coming out, all that good stuff. So follow us there, share it with your friends, all those good things. All the episodes, comicexposure.com. You can find all that stuff there. If you want yourself a Comic Exposure t-shirt, there's a link to the store there. You can find that. And Travis, I think that's it. Folks, we'll see you on the next trade.